Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. First up this week, it's Arch Obler's Plays. Radio fans will associate Arch Obler with that ultimate radio horror show, Lights Out. But in 1940, he had his own show. Now let's listen to James Cagney, starring in Johnny Got His Gun, as heard on March 9th, 1940.
Arch Obler's Plays. A Story in the Night. Tonight, James Cagney in Arch Obler's dramatization of the most talked-of book of the year, Johnny Got His Gun, by Dalton Trumbull.
We tell you of Joe Bonham. 22 years ago, he went to war. They carried him back from that war. They carried him back because he had no arms, no legs, no ears with which to hear, no eyes with which to see, no mouth with which to speak. Today, he lies alone in a room in a hospital close to your city. He's living flesh, and he waits. Your world is shut off from Joe Bonham. He has only the world within his own mind. We tell you of Joe Bonham. These are the thoughts of a boy who 22 years ago went to war.
Somebody listen to me. I'm talking to you. Somebody listen to me. Gotta talk to somebody. It's dark and lonely. Somebody... No. Going out of my head again. How can you hear what ain't got a tongue, ain't got a mouth, ain't got... No, won't think of that anymore. Gotta think of something, yeah, something else. If I don't think, my head, yeah, quick, think about when I was a kid.
Hey, Joe, come on in swimming.
Yeah, swimming. When I was a kid, I went swimming. Dive in the river, feel the water against my legs and my arms. Now I haven't got any leg... No, no, won't think of that. Think about... My town.
It's the nicest little old place on earth, Shale City.
I gotta remember.
Hamburger, get your hot hamburger, get your hot hamburger.
Yeah, best hamburgers in the world.
All right, boy, here's 30 cents. Go down and get three hamburgers.
Pa.
Oh, they're delicious. If I could only cook like this.
Ma, she... No. No, don't think of her. Think about... County Fair.
See the lady cut in half, the fourth part of a dollar.
Oh, motorcycle rider, defying death inside a straight up and down circular wall.
I can't remember anymore. I gotta remember. I gotta. If I don't remember things, I'll think. And if I think... No. I gotta remember something. Something. Girls. Think about girls. Quick, think about girls.
Joe?
Kareen?
Joe, I'm scared. I'm so scared.
No.
Kiss me. Hold me.
We shouldn't have turned the lights out. Your old man will be sore.
He understands.
Your lips.
Don't go. They'll kill you.
I gotta go. When you're drafted, you gotta.
Oh, Joe. Joe, I don't want you to go. Hold me. Tight. Maybe we'll never get another chance. Now, Joe. In your arms, Joe. In your arms. In your arms.
My arms. My arms.
What? What?
Joe, hold me. Don't go,
Johnny,
don't.
Get your gun, get your gun, get your gun.
Joe, I'm part of you now.
There's that
oh,
great
go, Joe.
Theodore Roosevelt said.
Hey, Roosevelt.
All aboard, soldier. All aboard, soldier.
No, no. Hold me, Joe. Hold me. Both your arms.
haven't got any arms. You hear me, Corrine? I haven't got any arms. I haven't got any arms.
What's the matter with me? I didn't find it out yesterday or the day before. It was
1939,
1938,
1937.
A long time ago. Joe. Karine, you're still in my head. I'll tell you, as if you were here. Here's how I found out everything about myself. I woke up like out of a dream. It was like I was in the water. I tried to swim, but I didn't have any arms. I started to kick my legs to float up in the air out of the bed. But I couldn't kick. I didn't have any I threw my head back. I started to yell. I only started. But how can you yell when you haven't got a... I began to reach out, Karine. The only way I could reach out... with the nerves of my skin. The hole in my face. Feel the skin creeping around the edge of it. It went. It went. I was blind. What a lousy dream. Nobody could live like that. Just dream and that's all. But it wasn't a dream. It wasn't a dream. Mother. Mother, where are you? Hurry, Mother. Hurry, hurry, hurry and wake me up. I'm having a nightmare, Mother. Where are you? Mother, listen to me. I can't stand it. Mother, please, please tell me it's not me, not me. Not me. No, no, not me. Oh, please. That's the way I found out a long time ago. Who was I telling that to?
Joe.
Oh, Karine. Still in my head, in my heart. Now I'll tell you about how I found out about time, about the days. Knowing about the days you're living through, that's important, see? But all I remembered was diving the dugout and then... And that was all. A day in September 1918, and that's all. Time stopped then. Start time over again. But how could I catch hold of time when I was caught inside myself? Vibrations. I had it. When the nurse came into the room, the vibration of her footsteps running up through the floor, through the bed, through the springs of the bed, into me. All I had to do was count the seconds, then the minutes, then the hours between each visit she made, until I had 24 hours counted up in my head. And after that, I'd be able to figure the days out just by counting up her visits. One day, the minute the nurse left me, I began to count.
One, two, three.
Second by second.
Four,
second
five,
by second.
Six,
when
seven,
I counted 60,
eight,
that
nine,
meant a minute,
ten,
as nearly as I was able to figure it.
13,
but I
14,
always lost count. I'd think of something else. Then I'd lose count again.
One, two, three.
One, two.
Day after
five,
day after day,
two,
but I could never keep track.
Five,
I couldn't.
Six,
I couldn't.
Five.
And all the time. All the time, the days were running away from me. And then, one day it happened. The skin on the side of my neck, the half of a forehead above the mask. Lying there all the years gone by, I got to thinking that maybe there was some way I could use those pieces of skin. Skin free to the air. They were healthy. I got to thinking what a man did with his skin.
To feel with.
But that didn't seem enough.
To sweat with.
Yeah, sweat with. Hot and cold.
Sunrise and sunset.
Just like that. The idea came into my head just like that. All I had to do was to feel with my skin. When it changed from cool to warm on that little piece of skin, it'd be sunrise and the beginning of a day. I got to thinking about the nurse and how many visits she made me each day and when she made them. Yeah, I'd better start with the nurse. She changes the bedding. In a hospital, they must change bedding in the morning, maybe around 8 o'clock. So all I gotta do is wait till she changes the bedclothes. That'll mean it's morning. Then wait, maybe 18, 20 hours, and that'll be next morning. That'll be sunrise. You can feel the heat of sunrise against your skin, yeah. So I waited until the next time she changed the bedding. She walked away. Calm down, because you haven't proved anything yet. Calm down and wait and count her visits. Number two, I dozed off and woke. Visit number three, time got all mixed up. Then four, and then... the fifth time. And then all of a sudden, I knew it was happening. My heart stopped, my breath stopped. I knew it was happening. Slow at first, crawling along my skin. Warmer and warmer, the rising sun. In my room, I'd won. I'd caught up with time again. The sun, it was dawn. It was dawn for the world and for me. I could smell the dawn. Yeah, me without a face lying there, and the smell of the dew on the grass, and me without eyes shading my eyes and seeing the sun coming up over the mountains back home, and the hills going pink and lavender like the inside of a seashell. The sun warming my little piece of skin, and me seeing without eyes the town where I was born, and me without ears hearing the lowing of the cows waiting to be milked, and babies kicking in their cribs and rubbing their eyes with their fists. It's sunrise, and I've got it. And now I'll always know when it's sunrise, and they can't take it away from me. Thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I may never have anything else, but I'll always have dawn and the morning sunlight. A year went by fast. I was a busy guy. I learned a lot. Yeah, could even tell my nurses apart. The day nurse always walked to the bed with four steps. She was always the same, but the night nurses seemed to change. One of them... must have cried when she looked at me. I felt her tears wet on me. I like to think she was young and beautiful. But every night, summer and winter, week in and week out, month in and month out, every night, I was with you, Karine. With you, darling. My arms around you. Yours around me. With you, Karine.
Joe, my darling.
Close to you.
My dearest.
My arms around you.
My lover.
Yours around me.
Mine.
With you, Karine.
Oh, Joe.
2 years went by after I discovered time. 3 years went by after I discovered time. The fourth year started awfully slow. One day I felt vibrations. Vibrations heavier and heavier, and then they stopped. I knew they were standing around the bed. After all these years, visitors. And all at once, crazy thoughts went through my head.
It may be your mother.
No.
Karine.
No, not Karine. Not Karine standing by my bed. You can't see me. Not this way. Not you, Karine. Go away. Then a hand came to rest on my forehead. Man's hand.
Doctors.
Yes. Maybe doctors come to examine me. Somebody was touching at my nightshade over my left breast. The cloth fell back against my chest again. It was heavy now, weighed down by something. Medal. They've given me a medal. Me, a medal. Me, a medal. Me! The generals were here, around my bed. The generals, the big guys, the famous guys who still had arms and legs and could still see and talk and smell and taste. In my throat, I felt a tearing of something that used to be a voice. I was talking to them, and they couldn't hear me. I was saying, listen, big guys, I'm lying here like a side of beef. And for what?
War. We're going to war.
Yeah, someone said that, so I went. But why? Why? Somebody just said...
let's go out and fight for liberty.
Liberty? What kind of liberty? How much liberty, and whose idea of liberty? A guy says, come on, let's fight for liberty.
and he can't show you liberty. If you're going to die for liberty, you've got to know in advance what liberty is and whose idea of liberty they're talking about and just how much of that liberty we're going to have.
Maybe that's a bad way to think. The big guys say it's bad, and I heard them. In the schools and the newspapers and the legislatures and the congresses, that's their business. They sound wonderful.
This ground is sanctified by blood.
They shall not have died in vain.
Our noble dead.
But I'm asking you, big guys, what do the dead say? Did any one of them ever come back and say...
I'm glad I'm dead, because death is always better than dishonor.
Did they say...
I'm glad I died to make the world safe for democracy.
Nobody but the dead know whether all these things people talk about are worth dying for or not. And the dead can't talk. So the words about noble death and sacred blood and honor and such are all put into dead lips by those that got no right to speak for the dead. I'm asking you, big guys, how did they feel about it just before they died? Did all those guys die thinking of democracy and freedom and liberty and honor? You know they didn't. They died crying in their minds like little kids. They died crying for the face of a friend. They died crying for the voice of a mother or father or wife or baby. They died moaning and crying for life. I know. I'm the nearest thing to a dead man on earth. There's nothing bigger than life. What's noble about having your legs and arms blown off? What's noble about being blind and deaf and dumb? I'm dead, big guys, and I died for nothing. You hear me? Nothing, nothing. You hear me, big guys? But they didn't hear me. Just as you couldn't hear me, Kareem, if you were standing next to me. All the generals heard was the blowing of the air in the tube in my throat. When I heard the vibrations of the footsteps that said they were going, I began to think. The vibrations. Up to now, I thought only of the vibrations coming to me. How about making my vibrations go to them? Yes, vibrations to them. A footstep on the floor is a kind of vibration. The tap of a telegraph key is another kind. I had it. I had it. When I was a kid, Bill Harper and me, we had a telegraph set. Used to telegraph to each other. Dot, dash, dot, dash, dot, dash, dot. I remember the code, the Morse code. All I had to do to break through to the people outside was to lie in bed and dot, dash to the nurse. I could give messages and receive messages. I raised my head from my pillow. I dropped it. Then I did it twice quickly. That was it. With my head, raise my head, let it fall on the pillow. The Morse code. S-O-S, help. I tapped it out of my pillow with my head. S-O-S, all over the world, that meant help. S-O-S, help, help. Then the door of the room jarred open and the nurse's footsteps came up to the bed. S-O-S, S-O-S, over and over again. She was looking at me. I knew it, I knew it. S-O-S, help me. S-O-S, help me. S-O-S, oh, why can't you understand? S-O-S, help me. S-O-S, help me. S-O-S, S-O-S.
Help me, S-O-S. Help me.
My head full of it. Help tapping me. It out with my head over and over. Over and over. Couldn't stop. Why won't they hear me? Why won't they understand? Why won't they hear me? Karine, why? No. There isn't any, Karine. There isn't nothing. I've been talking in my head. There's nothing for me. Nothing.
S.O.S.
I don't know
help
what
me.
Day it is.
S.O.S.
I don't know
help
what
me.
Month it is.
S.O.S.
I don't know what
help
year it is.
S.O.S.
I've been tapping help for years
me.
And years S.O.S. and nobody hears
help
me.
S.O.S.
Nobody, nobody,
S.O.S.
nobody. Someone's come into the room. Footstep light. My regular day nurse. Hers are heavy. Who is this one? Start tapping now. What? What is this one doing? Opening the nightshirt. She's moving the tip of her finger against my skin. What? Drawing something. Huh? I know. The letter M. I know. Shake my head. Yes, yes, I know. I understand. It's M. Wonderful M. writing something else on my skin. E. Yes, yes, I got that. R. Yes. Another R. Yes. Now what? Why? Nothing more. M-E-R-R-Y. Mary. Writing again. C-H-R-I-S-T-M-A-S. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, nurse, I understand. Nodding my head to tell you I understand. I can't say it so you can hear me, but in my heart I'm saying it. Merry Christmas, nurse. God bless you. Bells in my town. I'm hearing them in my head, nurse.
"'Twas the night before Christmas."
"Mother."
"And all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse."
"Mother, I hear you."
"The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in a hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there."
"Every Christmas Eve, I remember."
"He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like down from a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, 'Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.'"
"Merry Christmas, Mother. Merry Christmas, Mother." "Nurse, new nurse, smart nurse. She'll pay attention to me. Old nurse didn't understand. New nurse, you've got to understand. Cabin, I'll start. There, nurse, I did it. Did you understand it? 3, 2, and 3. S-O-S. Did you understand it? I'll do it again. Morse code, you understand? Morse code. Watch, nurse, watch. If I had a tongue, if I had a mouth, I'd yell it at you. I'd scream it at you. But I have nothing but the tapping of my head, so watch, nurse, watch. If you turn and walk out of the room and never come back, you'll be carrying my life with you. Your life and death to me, nurse. Look, I'll tap it again. See? S-O-S. Help me. S-O-S. Oh, I'll do it again. I'm praying now, nurse. Me, just an ordinary guy, I'm praying. Oh, please, God, make her understand what I'm trying to tell her. Please, God, make her understand. I know you're a busy guy. I know there are millions of people praying to you every minute. I know all these things, God, and I don't blame you for getting behind in your orders. Nobody's perfect, but what I want is such a little thing. All I want you to do is to take a tiny little idea that's in my mind and put it in her mind 2, maybe 3 feet away. That's all I want, God. Just a little idea that's in my mind and put it in her mind. It's such a little thing, God. Such a little thing. She's going away. She's gone out of the room. No, no, can't be true. Can't shove me down under the ground again, bury me deep again. No, no, I won't believe it, I won't. I won't start crying now. She'll come back. She's my life. She's my chance at life. She will come back. She will, she will, she will. Door. She's back. Brought someone with her. Man's finger on my head. What? Finger tapping on my head. Tapping out W. H. Tapping out the code on my head. A. T. W. H. A. T. What? D. O. Y. O. U. Y. O. U. U. W. A. N. T. W. A. N. T. What do you want? What do I want? What do I want? What do I want? I want to get out. Let me out. That's all I want. I've been lying here for years and years in a room in a bed with a little covering of skin. Now I want out. I've got to get out. If I had legs, I could run away. I could get away. I could get out into the open where there's air, where there's room, where I'm not in a hole and smothering. Inside me, I scream and howl and push and fight room and air for escape from the smothering, from the loneliness. So let me out of here and take me back into the world. No. I didn't tap that out. What I just said, I only was thinking. Won't say it to you waiting up there, no. Before I ask you up there, before I tap it out with my head, I've got to think out just what I'm going to tell you. It may be my last chance. I've got it. Listen, you up there. I'm tapping it out with my head. Let me out of here. I can earn my keep. I can do a job like anyone else. Take me out of here and build a glass case for me so people can see me. Take me in my glass case to the beaches, to the county fairs and the church bazaars and the circuses and the traveling carnivals. You'll do a wonderful business with me, and I could pay you for the trouble. They've never seen nothing like me. I'm something you can really holler about. I'm the dead man who's alive. The live man who's dead. I'm the man who made the world safe for democracy. Take me into the places where men work and make things. Take me there and say, boys, here's a cheap way to get by. Maybe times are bad and your salaries are low. Don't worry, boys, because you'll have your chance. There'll be another war along pretty soon, and then maybe you'll be lucky like me. Take me into the schoolhouses, all the schoolhouses in the world. They'll scream at first and have nightmares at night, but they'll get used to it because they've got to get used to it. And it's best to start them young. Take me into the colleges and universities and academies and convents. Call the girls together, all the healthy, beautiful young girls. Point to me and say, girls, here is your father. Look, girls, here is your lover. Call all the young men together and say, here is your brother, here is your best friend, and here are you, young men. Take me wherever there are parliaments and diets and congresses and chambers of statesmen. I want to be there when they talk about honor and justice and making the world safe. Put my glass case upon the speaker's desk, and every time the gavel drops, let me feel its vibration through my little glass case. Then let them draft notes and ultimatums and protests and accusations. But before they vote on them, before they give the order for all the little guys to start killing each other, let the main guy wrap his gavel on my case and point down at me and say, gentlemen, here is the only issue before this house, and that is, are you for this thing here, or are you against it? And if they are against it, then let them stand up like men and vote. And if they are for it, let them be hanged and drawn and quartered and paraded through the streets and thrown out into the fields where no clean animal will touch them, and may no green thing ever grow where they rot. Take me into your churches, your great towering cathedrals, which have to be rebuilt every 50 years because they are destroyed by war. Carry me in my glass box down the aisles where kings and priests and brides and children at their confirmations have gone so many times before to kiss a splinter of wood from a true cross on which was nailed the body of a man who was lucky enough to die. Set me high on your altars and call on God to look down upon his murderous little children, his dearly beloved little children. Then bring in the fierce ones, the spawners of hate, the inventors of slogans. Bring them in and make them look at me, and then dare them to break the peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have brought you James Cagney playing the leading role in Dalton Trumbo's memorable novel of the year, Johnny Got His Gun. The book was dramatized for radio by Arch Oboler. The musical score was written, conducted by Gordon Jenkins. Mr. Cagney can now be seen in the Warner Brothers picture, The Fighting 69th, and in the forthcoming production, Torrid Zone. In preparation is City of Conquest. The book, Johnny Got His Gun, is the prize-winning novel by Dalton Trumbo. All of us want to thank Mr. Cagney and Mr. Trumbo for their great contribution to this program. Next week, it is our pleasure to present an actor known and respected by all of us, Mr. Ronald Colman, in an unusual play, The Most Dangerous Game. Next week, then, Mr. Ronald Coleman. Arch Obler's plays are a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company. Tonight's play came to you from Hollywood's Radio City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Now let's listen to America's favorite ventriloquist dummy, Charlie McCarthy, with guest Fred Allen, broadcast on October 21st, 1945.
Charlie McCarthy Show! This is Ben Grauer, ladies and gentlemen, greeting you on behalf of Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Ray Noble and his orchestra, Anita Gordon, Mortimer Snerd, Ursel Twing, and our guest for the evening, Fred Allen. And here's Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Did he say Fred Allen?
That's right, Charlie, he did. Fred says he wants to talk to you. He wants to clear up a matter.
Well.
Yes. In his opinion, you have misjudged him.
Yes, well, I respect his judgment as much as if he knew what he was talking about.
Yes. Now, when Allen comes in, I want you to be courteous.
Yes, Mr. Bergen. I'll remove my hat.
That's fine.
And then I'll clip him, so help me, I'll mow him down.
No.
Ray Noble and his orchestra with a selection from the Song of Norway, Strange Music.
There's a matter that I want to talk to you about.
Yes, Mr. Bergen. Whatever it is, though, I didn't do it.
No, of course not.
And what's more, I've got three witnesses who'll swear they didn't see me do it.
I see. Yeah, Charlie, what I want to talk to you about is a matter that's rather personal.
Well, naturally, yes.
I walked into my bedroom this afternoon and I found that most of my bedding was gone.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Now, regardless of what you say, young man, I'm positive you took it.
Yeah?
Yes. Am I right?
Give this man a $12.
Yeah. Just as I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what did you do with the bedding, Charlie?
Well, I took it to make a bed for Ermitrude and Herkimer.
I see. And who in the world are they?
Well, they're two of my live oysters.
Oysters?
Yeah.
Oysters?
Yeah. You know, they have to live in beds, you know.
Yes. Well, what are you doing with two live oysters?
Well, if you must know, I'm now raising pearls.
Oh, I see.
Yes. You're now talking to Bivalve McCarthy.
I see.
The oysterologist.
Yes, of course. Well, that's very interesting.
Well, thank you.
And where did you get these oysters?
Well, you know that seafood cafe around the corner?
Yes. You mean the one with the big tank with the live fish in it in the window?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes.
Well, you see, I was in there, and, now, you may not believe this, Bergen.
Yes.
You may not believe it, Miss. But the little rascals, the little monkeys, they followed me home.
Followed you home?
Yeah.
You're right, Charlie.
What?
I don't believe it.
Oh, you don't go for it?
I don't go for it, no.
Well, then try this one for size.
No, now, wait a minute.
What I mean is, I borrowed them.
You borrowed them?
Yes, let's say that.
I see. You borrowed two oysters.
Yeah. I see.
The man actually loaned them to you, did he?
Yeah, he was, yeah. All right, so I latched onto them.
Yeah.
Anyway, stop pinning me down.
All right, yeah. Well, that's more like it. I'm ashamed of you, Charlie.
Well, I'm sorry.
Surely you don't want to grow up to be a thief.
On what, may I ask, do you base your information?
Well, now, wait. Oysters.
Yeah.
I'll bet you don't even know what to feed them.
Well, I do. Oyster crackers, of course. Yeah. But when they're not looking, I'm going to feed them some string.
String, and why string?
Well, and when they turn out the pearls, they'll be already strung.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I say, did I hear someone mention oysters and pearls?
Yes, Ray. Would you like to invest in my oyster orchard?
Oyster orchard?
Yes. With my brains and your money, what can we lose?
My money, old boy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'll be glad to sell you an interest in my oysters.
Well, to me, Charlie, that sounds like the old shell game.
Yeah.
Shell game. You do see it, don't you?
Yeah.
I believe I concocted a bit of a drollery.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
I don't think the world is ready for it, frankly. A little bit of you goes a long way, Ray.
Well, after all, old chap, I mean, a joke's a joke.
Not when you tell it.
All right.
Now, will you get out of here?
Oh, right, old boy, right.
He'll be sorry, though, when the pearls start rolling out.
Oh, of course he will.
Yeah.
Now, you talk, though, as though you expect to get pearls right away and lots of them.
Well, why not?
Well, Charlie, don't be silly.
I've already got the mama and the papa oyster. And before long, I'll be hearing the patter of little blue points.
Well, it's plain you haven't studied your biology lessons.
No.
No, oysters are quite different from other forms of life.
Yeah.
Yes. The oddities of nature can be very fascinating.
Yes. Well, not the one you were out with last night.
All right.
Oh, boy. Well, what do you mean I don't know my biology? I don't sort of follow you there.
Well, it's a rather scientific and, I suppose it's a rather delicate subject to try and explain.
Well, you can try.
Yeah. I don't know whether I should tell you or not.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Bergen. I can keep a secret. You know me. I don't talk. Come think of it, I ain't kidding. All right.
Well, what I mean, Charlie, is oysters are very changeable. At times, the mother oyster, well, they aren't really mothers.
No?
No.
You mean the stepmothers?
Well, no. No, you see, it's like this. To begin with, I'll put it another way.
Another way?
Yeah.
Up to now, you haven't put it anyway.
Well, on second thought, I think we better forget the whole thing.
Oh, come on, Bergen, tell me. I want to learn more about the oysters in the raw.
Yeah, all right. Well, what I was trying to say is that oysters never, well, what shall we say, you know, pair off or go together.
Oh, you mean they never get married?
Yeah, you might say that, yeah.
No.
That's right. Does Luella Parsons know about this? Or... Now, wait a minute, Charlie. I may have gotten you a little confused here. Perhaps I should have said that...
You've said quite enough, Mr. Bergen. You scandal monger, you.
Oh, now, listen, Charlie.
No, please. You disillusioner, you.
Oh, now, Luke.
I was just an innocent child before you started
it. Oh, now, listen, Charlie. You're raising oysters, aren't you? I thought you'd like to know.
Please, Bergen.
Listen, Charlie.
No, please. It's nothing you can say.
Charlie.
No. You've destroyed something fine in me.
Oh, yeah.
You better go, old man. You better go. Just go.
All right.
Ooh, throw my heart away. Ooh. can never come true. Seems as though I'll ever be blue.
You've been taking pictures.
Yep. I've been snap shooting New York.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Is that a brownie? I say, is that a brownie?
No, it's a camera.
Yeah, I know it's a camera.
Oh, ain't he dumb, though?
I suppose you know that getting the right exposure is very important.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you have a light meter?
What?
I say, do you have a light meter?
Oh, a light meter? Yeah. No. I don't even have a dark meter.
Oh, didn't even know. Well, what do you do on a cloudy day?
Well, wear my rubbers.
Oh, I see. Well, how many pictures have you taken so far? A dozen?
A dozen? No. Oh, I'd say just about 12.
About 12.
But I think I held the camera backwards.
Oh, you held the camera backwards?
Yeah.
You mean you were pointing at you instead of at what you were photographing?
Yeah.
Well, that's silly.
Yeah, right up me, I'll point it all the time. Can anyone use 12 attractive snapshots of my stomach?
Now, don't tell me those are the only pictures you've got.
Well, that's all I guess. I just kept taking pot shots.
Yeah, as I see. Well, Mortimer, let me take a good picture of you. You know, I'd like one for myself.
Yeah?
Yes.
Well, they say that I look pretty good in a picture.
Oh, you do look good in a picture, do you?
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah, I see.
All
except around the face, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that. Mortimer, I don't think you're homely. I say, I don't think you're homely.
Oh, go on. You got eyes, ain't you?
Yeah. I think you have an inferiority complex.
Oh, thank you. I wish I knew something nice to say about you.
Well, it's all right. Mortimer, how can you be so stupid?
Well, I think my brains is out of focus.
I see. You got it?
Anita Gordon, Charlie's 15-year-old singing discovery, and 20th Century Fox starlet sings The Wish That I Wish Tonight.
I'm wishing that I may, I'm wishing that I might have a wish that I wish tonight. I've told my lucky star the wish that I've made, and every time so far he's come to my aid. It may not be today, it may not be tonight, but I'm sure it will be all right. And maybe by tomorrow, if I wish with all my might, I might have the wish I wish tonight. I'm wishing that I may, I'm wishing that I might have the wish that I wish tonight. I've told my lucky star the wish that I've made, and every time so far he's come to my aid. It may not be today, it may not be tonight, but I'm sure it will be all right. And maybe by tomorrow, if I wish with all my might, I might have the wish I wish tonight.
Well, Charlie, I wonder where Fred Allen is. He should be here by now.
Where is that self-made has-been?
Oh. Now, please. I realize that you should have been rewarded for getting Alan a job with...
All right. And I'm going to sue him, too. I'm going to sue the man.
Oh, now, wait a minute. In any event, let's remember, in the eyes of some, he's still an important man.
Yeah. Important. After all, who is Alan? Just a nasal twang suspended between two pleated pouches. Or...
Well, Fred Allen. Thank you, Edgar. I'm here to talk to Charlie.
Well, it's too late, fossil face. You can tell it to the judge, that's
what you mean. McCarthy. I came here to bury the hatchet, and I know approximately where I am going to bury it. Fred, please, let us not quarrel. You're right, Edgar. Between us who have worn the motley and flaunted the sock and buskin, there is, after all, an eternal bond of brotherhood.
That's all, brother. You sock him and I'll busk him. All right.
I can understand how you feel, Charlie. Perhaps in a fit of pique, temporary transient pique, I did act a trifle hasty. You must hate me.
I'll be glad to.
Now, you shouldn't talk that way, Charlie. You know, you and I have something in common. We're both Irish.
If you're Irish, you must be shanty Irish.
Well, that's better than being a part of the shanty. Which part, it doesn't say here.
Stick with me. I'm practically alone out here.
Well, I would suggest enough of this sort of thing, Fred. Now, what is it that you want to see us about? Well, I'd like to patch up our little misunderstanding. Good. Edgar, I happen to be in a repentant mood. I wish to make amends. Although, mark you, I feel as though I owe Charlie nothing.
Yeah. He owes me nothing. Did you hear that? Just listen to this letter I got from the park commissioner, Moses. Quote, it says here. Dear Mr. McCarthy, you did a big thing for me in getting Alan a job. See? Now no one steals the food I throw to the pigeons.
Well, that's fine. You can tell Mr. Moses now I won't have to glue on all of those feathers every time I go out to eat.
Now, Fred, can we get back to the reason for your visit here?
Well, this thing has upset me, Edgar. Last night, as I lay upon my pillow, I brushed aside a vagrant tear which hung pendant-like from my glistening orbs. I was thinking.
You were stinking.
No, I was wondering why two dear old friends, Edgar, should have to settle their differences in court.
Well, you should have thought of that before.
Edgar, I'm allergic to lawsuits. They're so unpleasant. They take up so much time.
And you always lose.
Now, instead of stooping so low as to pick up that yoke, stooping so low as to offer you anything as filthy and as debasing as money, I tell you what I'd like to do, Charlie. I'd like to have you appear in a little sketch on my program, for which you will be handsomely rewarded. Now, in this play, Charlie, you are to be the star, the great lover.
See, that's what I get for being tight. But tell me more about it. I'll listen.
Well, the play is called Weekend at Joe's Flophouse. And you play the part of a big lumber magnat, Fiorello Q. Splinterbottom III.
The third, no less.
The third. You're still in the money.
I suppose I don't appear until the very end of the last act or something like that.
No. Charlie, you come right on at the opening, and then you never leave the stage.
Yeah, well, now that's good. Now that's all right. In fact, it's too good. I smell a rat here.
If you have the parts, let's read over the play.
Good, Edgar. Say, Ray, you're a sound man.
Well, thanks. I have been feeling rather chipper lately, you know.
I mean, you handle the sound effects in the play.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Now, as the curtain rises, we see that outside it is a beautiful summer afternoon, and a bumblebee is lazily flitting from flower to flower. The bee, Ray.
Oh, yes. Buzz, 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 and all that rot, you know.
A Bob White gives his call.
Robert White?
The cuckoo clock in the hall strikes 2:30.
Cuckoo?
I enter. I am a Chinese detective. I speak to the butler. Mr. Butler, your master, Mr. Splinterbottom, life in great danger. I have come here secretly to warn you.
Indeed, sir. And who should I say is calling?
I am Detective Wan Long Pan, famous Chinese G-man, Oriental Dick Tracy. Where is your master?
Ah, here he comes now, sir.
how blue the sky, how bright the sun. As I look beyond the daffodils, I see the shimmering heat over the rutabaga patch. Who got shot?
You did. Lie down, you're dead.
How do you like that? I didn't even finish my speech.
Oh, yes, you did.
Oh, no, I didn't. You shot me right in the middle of the rutabaga patch. Oh, no.
Now lie down and let rigor mortis set in. Don't hog it. Let another party in.
Do you mean I get killed this soon?
Yes. The rest of the action takes place while you lie on the floor.
It will over my dead body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to move around. You're a corpse, so stop wiggling.
Yeah. Well, I wiggle till the sun goes down.
That is any snake's prerogative.
Now, just a moment. This isn't much of a part, Fred. Now, I thought Charlie was in all through the show and didn't leave the stage.
Well, he doesn't, Edgar. He stays there as a dead body.
Well, then, pardon me for objecting,
now,
Mr. Allen.
Now, just a minute. You stay out of this, Curly.
By that, I suppose you're referring to my hairline.
What hairline?
Well,
from the neck up, you are indecent.
Oh.
I have be more fuzz on a choir boy's cheek. You know, there's a rumor around that your head was the inspiration for that song, One Meatball.
Yes. You're such a clever wit, Mr. Allen.
Yes. If all your jokes were laid end to end, they'd just lay there.
Now shut up, you, or I'll put a ring in your nose and use you for a hitching pole.
If I put a ring in your nose, you couldn't talk at all.
Now, I'm not afraid of you, McCarthy. I'll scare you so stiff you can go on the air for a starch sponsor.
Alan, I warn you, you'll find Charlie quite a match for you.
Match?
Yes.
I have struck better matches on the seat of my old trouser.
That's a broad statement.
No end.
Your behavior is not a credit to the acting profession, Mr. Allen.
You mean that I am a ham?
No, I insult an innocent pig. No.
I told you to keep quiet or I'll put a rubber beret on your head and use you for a plunger.
Listen, you broken.
No.
Let him go. I've got marine insurance. Let him go.
Charlie, regardless of what Mr. Allen says, remember, you must respect anyone who is older than you are.
I didn't know it applied to baboons, too.
Yes. Now, I resent your audacity, Whittling Bait. Are you trying to compare me to one of those baboons with a pink nose?
I don't care how you look at him.
One more crack like that and I'll turn you upside down and use you for a slingshot. I was a fool for coming here.
Coming here had nothing to do with it. Where's my lawyer? Oh, my lawyer.
I'll get it.
Pretend you're there.
is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.